Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review and for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. And Ian, it was just yesterday we talked about how the bad martini was that Hillary Clinton's server has been wiped clean and there probably will be no legal and possibly not even any political repercussions. Although, as you pointed out, her favorability numbers as a result of this scandal, the number of people who believe her suggests that it could hurt her politically. The good news today on this front is that it turns out Hillary Clinton's complicated excuse for not having a work email address is falling apart as well. This is the hot air version of the story. They say 3 weeks ago, Hillary Clinton claimed not to have done so, preferring convenience rather than carrying two devices to handle two different accounts as she would have had to do if she used an official State Department email account. But now the Associated Press says this: Hillary Rodham Clinton emailed her staff on an iPad as well as a BlackBerry, while Secretary of State, despite her explanation, she exclusively used a personal email address on a homebrew server so that she could carry a single device. So, Ian, I guess it kind of comes back to the same point we were just making yesterday about whether there'll be any real consequences to this. But once again, it seems like Hillary Clinton is living in the 90s and is unaware that there's an internet out there where these things are easily fact-checked.
Right. So there are a couple points here. First of all, it brings us back to the central question of motivation that we dealt with when these revelations first appeared. She says it's convenience. The only other option is really privacy. The convenience excuse is rapidly falling apart. So that leaves only one possible explanation, which is that she did this for privacy, which of course we've known all along, but it's nice to sort of have it confirmed. The second part of this is how quickly all of this is coming down the pipe. As you pointed out, Greg, 3 weeks, 3 weeks between that press conference and this, it was, I think, 24 hours before someone had dug up the video of Clinton saying that she used both an iPhone and a BlackBerry. So the idea, just as you say, that these things aren't going to be checked or found out in the age we live in is really sort of extraordinary. The third point here is that, fortunately, we may have other good martinis to come, because it's all there's really no way that this can get much better. Hillary might manage to slide on certain consequences to these things, but she set herself up in such a way when it came to explaining away this whole situation that anything that we can learn is going to be bad for her story, and it's just going to increase people's skepticism. And so those unfavorables that we talked about yesterday might increase as we go along. At least we can hope so.
Ian, what do you make of the rationale we're hearing from a lot of the talking heads that this means Hillary needs to officially launch her campaign sooner? And she's even suggested it's likely to come next month. So Does it make sense that the fancy, snazzy launch of a campaign is going to somehow knock this out of the headlines? Or does it make it even more awkward when you're launching under the shroud of what is a story that was pretty hard to believe in the first place and is now already crumbling piece by piece?
Yeah, it's hard to tell, but I can say this with reasonable confidence. The Hillary campaign is going to be wrapped up in identity, gender politics. She's going to run as the potential first female president, and isn't it time for a woman, and all of this. So as soon as she launches, the moment that that happens, the entire media narrative is going to be one of rah-rah for her glass ceiling shattering and accusations of sexism against anyone who complains, even if it's about this story from however long before her campaign. So it's difficult to know if it would get it out of the headlines, but people would be on the left in the media, and of course all the talking heads would pounce on it and be very sympathetic to trying to change the narrative. So right-wing media and her political opponents in the GOP field would need to be vigilant about keeping that story alive because it'll be very likely to be swamped.
So you expect the media to put down the laptop and pick up the buckets to carry the water.
Absolutely.
All right, on to the bad martini now. And on Friday, when Harry Reid announced that he would not be running for re-election next year, we used the word odious and some other adjectives that basically describe what a difficult human being and unlikable human being Harry Reid is in a number of different ways. And now we're getting another chance to see that. He sat down with CNN's Dana Bash to talk about a number of things, including his off-the-wall, baseless assertions against the Koch brothers and Mitt Romney from back in 2012, although I think some of the Koch brothers stuff was more recent. Here's Harry Reid back in 2012 on the floor of the Senate, mind you, just making up stuff about Mitt Romney's tax returns.
The word's out that he hasn't paid any taxes for 10 years. Let him prove that he has paid taxes, because he hasn't. We already know from one partial tax return that he gave us, he has money hidden in Bermuda, the Cayman Islands, and a Swiss bank account. Not making that up, that's in the partial year that he gave us. Mitt Romney makes more money in a single day than the average middle-class family makes in 2 years.
Wow, Harry Reid really going for a number of different target demographics there. There's the class warfare. There's the allegation that he didn't pay taxes at all. Essentially, this was over Mitt Romney agreeing to give a couple years of tax returns, and the Democrats, I think, wanted 10 for some reason. So Dana Bash is like, yeah, you basically said he didn't pay his taxes without a shred of evidence. Doesn't that smack of McCarthyism? And here's what Harry Reid said.
So no regrets about Mitt Romney, about the Koch brothers. Some people have even called it McCarthyite.
Well, they call it whatever they want. Romney didn't win, did he?
Ends justify the means, Ian.
It's perfect. It's a perfect epitomization of exactly what Harry Reid stands for, the exact philosophy by which he's operated for the past, you know, however many years he was in Washington, which is it really doesn't matter what you do if the outcome is correct. We had here at National Review a scathing editorial on Friday that was point for point spot on, but I added briefly to it in the corner, and the points are, I think, worth raising up here. This sort of consequentialism, this ends justifies means philosophy that he has, is not just Harry Reid. It's not just sort of one really gross character who happened to have been in a position of power for a number of years. If you think of the fact that he was the Senate Minority Whip for 6 years, I believe, and then will proceed to be both the majority and then minority leader for another 12, having an election every 2 years. This is the man that Democrats in the Senate chose to lead them time and time and time again. It's absurd to think that the Democratic Party, the Democratic caucus in the Senate, somehow held its nose and voted for this odious character. This is precisely who they wanted to lead them, which means, or at least strongly suggests, that they were perfectly okay with the tactics that he was willing to use. That should be just extraordinarily alarming. We on the right, especially in light of the president's lawless executive orders and all the rest, are very keen on the importance of process, the importance that things operate under the law, even when that means that the outcome is going to be unfavorable or unlikable for our side. It's very important that we maintain a government of laws, not a government of the whims of men. Harry Reid, as leader of the Senate, was perfectly willing to do exactly the opposite, say it doesn't matter what the process should be, we're going to just pursue our ends. And the Democrats were happy to back him time and time again in that effort. That should be an indictment, not just what he said about Romney's tax returns and the rest, is not just an indictment of Reid, it's an indictment of his party.
I think that's an excellent point, Ian, because I don't remember a single Democrat ever saying, how can you say that about Mitt Romney without a shred of evidence? They just went along with it. We saw it on the legislative front as well, the writing of the Obamacare bill behind closed doors, reconciliation, absolutely, on and on and on. So, all right, on to the crazy martini now. And we've been documenting pretty well here how the Obama administration is hankering for a nuclear deal with Iran by almost any means necessary. They're going to be allowed to keep their underground facility and perhaps keep nuclear centrifuges spinning down there. Right now, there's nothing written down on paper. The news today is that it's probably not going to get done today, but they're going to just push it back to June when the details were supposed to be in place. So we'll see what happens there. But if you hear a rattling, that's the can being kicked down the road, I think. But here's the crazy martini for today. This is according to a Washington Post ABC News poll. Americans by a 2-to-1 margin favor an agreement with Iran over its nuclear development program, even while broadly questioning whether a deal would in fact prevent Iran from producing nuclear weapons. In a result that supports the Obama administration's position in the face of Republican and Israeli criticisms alike, Americans by 59-31% back a plan to lift major economic sanctions against Iran in exchange for restrictions making it harder to produce nuclear weapons. It comes even though 59% are not particularly confident that such an agreement would achieve its goal of preventing Iran from developing nuclear arms. Basically, the thinking of a strong majority of Americans is probably not going to work, but hey, worth a try to basically give away the store here.
It's really bizarre. It is a clear indication of the fancifulness and the unreliability of public thinking on so many matters, especially when it comes to foreign policy. It's also, and I don't want to get too sweepingly philosophical, it's a very modern 21st century impulse, I think, this one that says, let's give this a shot. It might not work. It might work. But you only live once, you know, why not try it? And if it doesn't work, then we can roll it back and try something else. It taps into sort of humanitarian peacemaking impulses, which might not be badly intentioned, but are certainly out of place here. The simple fact is that the deal that we're going to make with Iran is not only probably not going to work, it's going to give them the bomb. It's essentially paving the road for it. The plan that might actually work, the one that public should say, maybe we should give that a shot, is stronger sanctions, walking away, supporting Israel, supporting our Gulf Arab allies in the region as they push back against Iranian ambitions. The polling on this just shows that most people haven't thought about it. There's just sort of a gooey public sentiment that supports deal making over over being harsh, over being stringent. And yeah, unfortunately, this is a situation where the public is just very, very wrong.
Ian, YOLO is something that should go when you should I eat one more of those or should right. I splurge on this on these concert tickets? It shouldn't be for nuclear proliferation and the world's number one sponsor of terrorism.
Precisely.
Well, that's apparently the mindset we're dealing with. Ian, always great to have you with us. Talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review and for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.